You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Welcome back to another episode, everyone. My name is Chris Lopez, and today's episode is the first episode of our seven-part series about how to elevate your flip here in the Denver metro market. So as I've mentioned before in some previous podcasts, my focus is to start doing some mini series to go really deep on some topics here because I like to learn about them. I also want to build up an extensive library as a future resource for myself, for clients, and other people around Denver. So one of my goals is always to go out there and find experts in their respective fields. As I think everyone knows out there, I am not a flipper, which is fine. So, but I am not the person who will be talking about how to go out there and flip properties, but I know who to go out there and talk with who are experts on flipping. So my guest today for today's episode and the rest of the episodes is Derek Marlin of Elevate. So Derek, welcome to the show.
Chris, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
So let's just start off with, I'm not sure if people realize this or heard it, but back in something, episode 54, episode 57 or so, you did a really good interview on your background and just what you've done here with your flipping business. Let's start off with, like, give everyone just like a 1 or 2 minute background about yourself.
Sure. So I started in the corporate world. I worked two super amazing corporate jobs, one for the Denver Broncos in marketing and corporate sponsorship sales. And then I changed over to sports media and worked for CBS television, selling all the sports programming on CBS networks based out of Denver. And that's actually how I got into investing. Was one of my colleagues at CBS was buying rental properties. And we kind of joked that she wasn't there very often, but she sure drove a much nicer car than everybody else in the office. And so we knew she was doing something in addition to TV sales. And she was buying turnkey rentals when the market had tanked. And so I started also buying rentals in 2009, bought small properties, four doors and less, all over Metro Denver from 2009 through 2012. And enjoyed the corporate world, but wanted to get out and start my own company. So left that and jumped into finance. Might come from a long line of financiers in Wall Street, primarily in the municipal market and the fixed income market. So I started a company with my dad for 2 years, was a fixed income and muni salesperson, and he was the trader. We did that through 2015. But had some time when the market, closed 3 o'clock Denver time to get more into real estate. And so I started doing flips in late 2014 and early 2015. Did that for a year where I kind of did double duty. And it was this perfect storm of the market was really, really taking off here in Denver. Was realizing that I love doing this. The bond market got crushed at the same time. So it became a super easy decision of time to get out of bonds and time to get 100% into real estate, and started full time in 2015 by myself. And fast forward to today where we do flips. We call them property redevelopment, but I think the easy term is a fix and flip. We do a bit of investor wholesaling, buying and selling from investors and to other investors when we've got too much going on. And then we have a consulting and training program and a teaching academy that we're launching. And I have a sister company that does multifamily out of state. So I own apartment buildings in Cincinnati, Ohio. But my primary focus is here with Elevation with a team of two, and just added a third team member here 2 weeks ago.
Great. And as you guys can tell, Derek has an impressive background. And that's one of the reasons why I asked him to come on here and do this in-depth series with us. And also just the way he has, I'll say, systematize his process for flipping and scaling his business has impressed me, because I'm a big believer in that the more things are systematized, you can scale things. It also makes things more duplicatable, so you can go out there, identify friction points, and also teach other people as well, because you've done a great job of, I think, downloading the information from your brain and putting into checklists and processes. I've seen your back office stuff with how you use your project management checklist, and they're very in-depth and very impressive.
Thank you.
So let's start off with just talking about what we're going to be covering in the series here, because this is something that I know you kind of put together the series on here. And so everyone knows the way I asked Derek to do this, I said, hey, Derek, act like you're writing a book on here and just give me a table of contents. So if people start chapter one and read all the way to the last chapter, they can read the book and get a really good in-depth idea about what it takes to flip. And you came back with some great information. So what are we going to cover in the series?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love the cadence that we're going to work on for this. We're putting together a 7-part series. So as everybody can see, we've got the flipping blueprint of what we're going to be talking about today. So really getting your ducks in a row to whether it's one flip or hopefully launching a company, you're able to efficiently put together your goals and set yourself up for success. Next week, we're going to get into a market overview of how things are going in Denver. And the thing that I love is that we're doing this all day, every day. And so we have real-time data that we'd love to share with your audience and your community. And then we're going to jump into how do we analyze a deal? Because obviously that's super important, really makes or breaks everything from then on out. Then we're going to go into how we're finding deals in the Denver market, which as we know is super competitive. Got to do a bunch of different things. So we'll dive into that. The 4 and 5 episodes are really the meat and potatoes of how we run our projects. And we call them the big 4 of project management. So they're 4 really integral documents in how we run our rehabs. And the first one is the budget. From a simple budget for a condo and a townhome to a room-by-room budget and very, very detailed for our larger properties. Then there's a statement of work, and that details every single thing that's happening in every single room. The next week, we'll jump into the second part, which is our fixtures and finishes. So how are we picking what type of nice things to put in the property to sell it most efficiently? And we have a 4-package system that we use. So again, we don't start from scratch every time we flip a property. We pick 1 of 4 finish levels and work off of that. And then by far, in my opinion, the most important is the timeline and the tracker. And that's how are you as an individual or a team running your projects efficiently and then communicating that to your contractors so that everybody's on the same page. Again, that's all done before we even step foot in the property of purchasing it. Episode 6 is actually running the project on a weekly basis of you've done all this pre-planning, you've done all this due diligence and documentation. How are you working on it on a week-by-week basis, finishing up the project? And then the last episode will be final details of how you're getting ready to sell the property, success tips and the way to properly list it to sell it on the back end for best possible profit, quickest possible sales time.
Wonderful. And so as we are doing these live, we'll be doing each one of these webinars every single week, and then we'll turn them into a podcast audio recording along with a detailed audio course. And once this whole 7-part miniseries is complete, we'll stick it up on the DenverInvestmentRealEstate.com website as a course. So that way you can go back and go through the whole course at your own pace, or go back and dive into details at some of these specific episodes where you need to focus on. All right, so Derek, this sounds great. Looking forward to doing this. And you want to give us more background just on your company, Elevation? I know you gave some background yourself, but Elevation, in my eyes, again, I am not an expert flipping, but you guys are more than just flipping houses out there.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the question. So yeah, we actually rebranded. We were Elevation Investment Properties, which is a key part of what we're doing, but we're really creating different products, if you will. So we rebranded to Elevation. We do the classic fix and flip, as people say, where you're obviously buying a distressed property, fixing it up, reselling it, and your company is keeping all the profit. We do wholesale from investor to investor. And that's really, I come from, obviously, prior to saying this, that marketing background. So we have some unique marketing avenues that has taken us a while to put into play, but are really paying dividends right now. So at any given point, we can do 5 to 6 projects for our flips or our rehabs. And after that, we really start to buy and sell from one investor to another. So not the classic wholesaler, if you will, but definitely selling to and from other investors. We've got a consulting program. So we work with individual clients one-on-one to help them through a project, whether it's a current project that they've got going, if they're new to the industry. We work with them on a one-on-one basis, which I love. But again, we never want to overextend ourselves. So from that, we've actually developed a teaching academy. So we're going to be starting a two-day intensive course that starts here this January, where we can help more people and give them every step of our playbook, every document that we used. Really, like you mentioned before, taking my kind of 10 years of real estate, 5 years of hands-on flipping, downloading that and giving them a huge head start. And then the new program that we're most excited about that we've really refined this past year and we're going to start marketing it more is our partnership flip. And that's a unique program that not many other people are doing, either nationwide or in this market that we know of, where we team up with people to help flip their property on our behalf. So with that one, someone comes to us with a property. Usually it's somebody that might be in a senior capacity and mom and dad are moving into an assisted living facility. Somebody owns a rental property. They're tired of being a landlord and they say, okay, maybe it's time to sell this house because I have a lot of deferred maintenance going on. I need to pay for my kiddo's college, whatever it is. We will flip that property for them. We will spend our money on the rehab and the materials, and then we'll do a profit share on the back end. So just creative ways to help add value to anybody that we might interact with and try to make it so that we can thrive in any market condition, no matter what we get thrown at us here in Denver.
Wonderful. And that's, again, this is why I want to bring you on here, just because you've got a big education component on there. So something I talk a lot about with my clients and actually just in general on the podcast, Derek, is a lot of people, times people come back, I want to get into investing. I want to do this. I want to do that.
Yeah.
In my mind, they often intermingle investing along with doing some type of real estate business.
Yes.
And, you know, and I wanted to talk about this because investing, hey, you go buy a rental property and you're fairly hands off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the property can still go in there and bring money if you're not there managing every single day. Now, it will take some effort on your part to manage it, whether you're directly managing it or having a property manager whom you still have to manage.
Right.
But then, for example, a real estate business. I'm a real estate agent.
Right.
If I'm not working it every day, I'm not making money. If I'm not selling properties, I'm not making money. If you're not flipping properties, you're not making money. If you're not out there slinging wholesale deals, you're not making money. And that's where it becomes more like the business standpoint. And I talked to a lot of people, they want to get into flipping properties.
Right.
And the most polite way I can say it from my perspective is many have unrealistic expectations.
Yes.
They want to go from zero to hero in 3 months.
Right.
And I've never had any business I've done where I've gone from anything in 0 to 3 months.
Right.
At best, I've probably usually spent some money and that's about it. It's usually taken me 2 to 5 years to get things up off the ground. But from your experience of building a flipping business, of coaching some other people, can you just give everyone out there a reality check as to what it takes to become a successful flipper?
That's a great question. I think that to become a successful flipper, no matter what level you have to, or you want to do it at, you have to be organized. And it's something that I was pretty blessed to have an organizational background, but every year we keep trying to refine it. So that reality check is, really, what do you want to get out of this part of the business? And you are 100% right. It is an amazing career, and it's something that I love and enjoy, but it absolutely takes work, and it's not the more passive style of investing. Really, it's looking at where your strengths and weaknesses. So do you have a contracting background or the ability to do some of the work yourself? Do you have a real estate background, whether it's a license to sell your properties or help find your properties? Do you know folks who do that? And can you put together a team? Because it's going to take a ton of time and hours and manpower to do that. So it's really defining that on the front end. And it is a tremendous amount of work. And the thing, when you talk about a reality check, that we always try to be cognizant of is you feel like you can get up in the morning and you are, quote, busy. But busy isn't always efficient. So, you know, and the way that I always say this is we see a lot of folks that pride themselves in, oh man, I'm so busy. I've already been to Home Depot 3 times today. That makes me cringe when I hear that, whether it's my contractor saying it or whether it's somebody who is running their own project, because you feel busy, but that doesn't equal productivity. So you really have to be careful. And it can happen even to experienced folks like us. We had one project that was much, much more labor intensive than we had originally planned. it was a big project for us, took a ton of time, and it was a joke, but I think it's sadly true, where if you looked at it on how much time you spent on it, I probably would have made more money than the guy at Starbucks who I was buying coffee from at 8 o'clock at night to try to finish that project. If I just worked at Starbucks 10 hours a week for a year or whatever. So it's super time intensive when you first get starting, and it's just something you just gotta, you know, again, systematize. And whether you want to do one, then you'll have tons of time on your hands, or whether you want to grow a business, then you can handle multiple projects. Cause if not, you're just kind of get up, clap your hands together and say, what can we do? You can do something, but it's not the most efficient way to do it.
So what type of advice would you give someone, you know, and I know there's a lot of variables in here, but someone that, you know, understands, hey, I'm willing to put time and money and slog away at it for a couple of years. Yeah. Like, what advice can you give that person out there as far as whether it's the right mentality to have or a time expectation? Just what advice could you give?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's really defining what do you want out of this upfront? So for some people, and I also go back to what are we doing real time with our clients too. So do you want to continue to work a corporate job that you might love and develop some chunks of income? So we talked about earlier of the strategy of passive income, which is important as well. But do you want to make some of those chunks of income? Might that be one flip or might that be three or four flips? And is your end goal to put money back in the market and help fund your retirement? Is that to help save for your kids' college? Is that to afford a really nice vacation that year or a boat or something? I mean, whatever your goal is, it's trying to figure out and define that upfront of what do you want out of it. And that will help set your expectations,
okay,
which is super important. And then it's thinking of it short term versus long term. What do you want to get out of it here in the next couple of months on that project? And where do you want to go in a handful of years? I think that's super, super important. From that of what do you want short and long term, then it's really looking at what time do you have available, and you can start to define what is a good deal for you. So for example, if you're doing a little bit of the work yourself, you want to just get started, making $10,000 on a flip is a good deal for you. Might not be for somebody else, but that's okay. Define that up front. And then how can you become more efficient? So it's really just that planning and making sure that you are being fair to yourself, because if not, you'll get frustrated and think you're not making progress, but you really are making progress.
I like that you talk about setting those incremental goals, because in the one flip I did, my main goal in that flip was to not lose money.
Yeah, perfect.
That was my number one goal, which when I told that to my wife, I told all other people, they're like, that makes no sense. I said, no, you don't understand. Like, if I don't lose money and I can successfully do the flip, I've gotten a great education from there.
Right.
Because we all, you know, hey, you spend a lot of money, go to college, or you spend a lot of money, go to a seminar, you spend money on a consultant. But if I can go out there and get real world experience, which I think is usually the best education, and not pay anything for it, that's a win in my book.
Right.
Now, I did make a few bucks, which was great.
Yep.
But my number one goal is I just don't have to lose any money. If I can walk away and have at least a dollar plus check clear from the closing table, I will be happy.
Yeah.
But what about this? Like, can you give some general advice on helping people think about building, I call it, a financial runway?
Yeah.
Because it always, you know, any business you do or any project you do, it takes money, it takes time. And I talk to people about this in flipping, and now I talk to a lot of people about this as real estate agents a lot of times, because I want to get my license, and they say, I'm going to get my license, you know, next month. I'm quitting my job the day after I get my license. And I say, I think that's a really bad idea.
Yeah.
Because do you have 12 months of money set aside to pay your mortgage or pay your rent and pay all your bills? Mm-hmm. Because like anything else, just because you have your real estate license, it means squat in the real world as far as making money. I mean, same thing with flipping. What do people need to do, or what rules of thumbs can you give people out there so they set themselves up financially for success?
Yeah, I think that's super important. That's where I really lean back on my experience in the finance world and really just financial planning. I felt comfortable having a certain emergency fund set up. So I think you have to have your personal financial house in order. And then even if it's not on a big level, you still need to think as a business owner. So you need to have your business financial house in order. So for example, we talked about mini steps to get to your goal. Think about, how can I realistically put aside 1 month of my true living expenses aside, bump that to 3 months, and then shoot for 6 months. I personally felt comfortable when I had 6 months worth of living expenses set aside in my emergency fund, so that I knew if everything was a disaster, theoretically I could live for 6 months, not, you know, miss a beat. And that was at our current living lifestyle. You could obviously and hopefully scale that back and stretch that out further, but that was super important.
So that was for your personal finances, like your personal bucket.
Yes, okay. That was my personal bucket because I didn't want to commingle personal with business.
Yep.
So it just made me feel safe. And then again, that's where you think of what are your goals up front. And that'll help you define how much are you comfortable putting aside and saving personally. The other thing on the personal side is to pay down debt. I think it's super important to have ideally zero or very, very little personal credit debt because if you're looking at how many dollars are coming into your bank account, whether it's from your job, from your investments, from a business like flipping, those things start to take a big toll. So ideally pay down that debt.
And you're talking like credit cards, yeah. Auto loans, like mm-hmm. non-mortgage debt.
Correct. Non-mortgage debt. I think depending upon who you ask, you obviously need to bring up student loan debt because a lot of people have it and it's important. Yep. But just kind of an aside, I went and got my MBA from Florida when I was getting into the sports business and I had the ability to pay it off extremely quickly. But I had a super reasonable payment. I had 2% interest. So I decided to stretch those payments out and reinvest the spread.
Let's talk about this because this is an interesting debate here. Because, if you got student loans at 2 or 3%,
right.
In my eyes, I'm not going to pay it off quickly because it's cheap money.
I completely agree. And it was odd saying that I was in, my late 30s paying off my MBA and I could have paid it off a handful of years after the fact. But when I look at the actual money that I made, it's gotten me exponentially further down the road. So you still want it manageable. Again, you still want to pay down debt. But to me, carrying some student loan debt made sense because I could get into investing. And really what I did was set aside money quicker to buy some of my first rental properties. Those properties made cash flow on their own. I sold those and bought 10 times the number of units out of state. So I mean, it's a little bit of a reach, but could I have paid it off faster? But then I said, oh, dang, I don't have money to buy my first fourplex. Well, that really translates to a tremendous upside.
Especially look at the compounding effect of buying the property and all the cash flow, the tax benefits, and then trading up into whatever you have. And it's Cincinnati now,
Cincinnati,
right?
Cincinnati. We're in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's really good advice. Okay, great. So get your personal bucket in order. And actually, before we talk about business, how do you... since a lot of people out there listening, they are married or have a significant other.
Yes.
And oftentimes it's, one person is very gung-ho about this. The other person is maybe not as gung-ho. Yep. How important is it to have the spouse, the partner on board with it? And how much do you think they need to be on board with you?
That's such a good question. I think they need to be 100% supportive and hopefully 75% plus on board. And the reason I give that number is because I'm sure there's always a bit of skepticism from any loving spouse to say, oh my gosh, are we really going to do this? And that's okay. But you don't want that as a friction point. And great example would be is we met with a husband and wife potentially to come on as consulting clients. And the husband said, no, this is what I want to do. He actually is an agent. So he had some exposure outside the business and his wife was an engineer. And he said, great, I'm going to meet with you and we're going to get going. I said, I'm not moving forward until we meet with your wife. And he's like, what are you talking about? I said, no, I'm a happily married man or whoever, whatever partnership that you're in. I want to meet with your significant other because I want them to know and I want to see their buy-in. And I think that's going to save you as a couple endless stressful nights and hopefully stress-free nights if you're both on the same page and there's definitely buy-in. And thinking practically, I think it's great to have somebody that has a corporate job. I'm blessed. My wife is a fellow entrepreneur and an amazing businesswoman. She's owned her business longer than I have. And our second biggest expense is health insurance because we have to buy it on the market. So I think it's great to have somebody that has that corporate job, that has that insurance, that benefits, and it gives you that longer runway and some of that stability that we can't predict the future with 100% certainty. So no problem. Just make sure there's buy-in. And then if you're ready to make the leap, then you feel a little better about it.
I think that's great advice. Okay, so shifting buckets from personal.
Yeah.
Actually, before that, any other things we missed on the personal side?
I think it's just being willing to live a little bit less in lavish is maybe not the right word, but just lifestyle to make some of those cuts so that you can help fund things. Good example is, I think it's great to have, let's say, a hard money lender if you want to use them to help fund your first deal. But I think it's a better scenario of let's use the lender to fund the deal. And then can you make sure that you can make that down payment yourself with your own personal funds? So it's being able to know that, okay, I can make that 10% down payment, for example, if that's what a lender requires, and I can still pay my regular bills and I can still live comfortably and not feel a ton of stress rather than living this kind of dual income, more corporate lifestyle. You might have to kind of scale back a little for short-term gain. It exponentially will help you in the long run.
Great. And then shifting over to like the business mm-hmm. bucket, what do you recommend people get set up in their business, I'll say business account,
yeah,
when they want to start flipping?
Yeah. So I would, again, no matter whether you're thinking of doing one property or 100 properties, I would incorporate and set up an LLC so that you can separate church from state. Not only is it 10 times more effective from a tax basis, but you can not commingle those funds of, and again, it helps kind of when there's that, oh, I have to write an interest payment check. It's not coming out of your checking account and your significant other's buying groceries and you're thinking, oh my gosh, where'd that money go? Separate your business account from your personal account. It's in Colorado, it's super easy. It's jumping on the Secretary of State website. It costs $50 to put an LLC together. If you're out of state, I know there's other ones. I've got family in New York and that's a little more expensive as a state, for example, but set up your own business entity. You can get quick, you know, operating agreements and legal documents, whether it's an attorney you've got to contact with or if it's a LegalZoom type of a service. And then also getting your funding set up for your flip. That's by far the next most important. So you kind of have your business set up. Ideally, again, it depends upon what your personal goals are, but if you can hopefully have the amount that you're going to make for your first 2 or 3 months worth of rehab payments in your checking account for your business, I think that's super important.
So actually, let me dive into some details with you on there. So I set up my LLC and I go to my bank, I get my business checking account.
Correct.
What would you say, what were the rules of thumbs you say for having X amount of dollars in my checking account, enough for the, like a 10% down payment on the property?
Correct, 10% down.
And then you said about 3 months worth of payments on property what, rehab or?
Yeah, what your rehab is gonna be. So if you're looking at doing, let's say a condo and a townhome and your rehab is $30,000 expense, you're probably gonna get through a good first half of that project. And let's say you want to set aside $15,000 in your business checking account. So I don't feel like you need to set everything aside because you will be essentially getting payments from the person you're getting your loan from. And I think people sometimes get the paralysis analysis type of thing where you have to have every box checked. It's sometimes better to jump in if you're 90% there, in my opinion. But yeah, kind of have half that money set aside for the rehab, have everything set aside for what your down payment might be, and then you can hit the ground running.
And do you recommend people keep like a general reserve or oh crap fund as well in their business account? Or is that, how do you separate that between your personal emergency fund and the business emergency fund?
Yeah, that's a good question. Ideally, I like to look at it almost the same. So what's it going to cost you to run your business for 1 month, 3 months, and 6 months? And that's different based on when you've got one property, two properties, 10 properties, of what are your monthly costs, whether you are renting a small office space, whether you are paying for separate internet or phone service, any business expense that you have, if you can set those aside, again, I would try to work towards that 3 month marker of whatever your expenses are in 3 months. I'd feel good about having that set aside in my business checking account.
Okay. And then you had mentioned getting your lending put into place.
Yes.
I'm assuming you're talking about hard money lending.
Correct.
How do you, let's jump into that. How,
yeah.
What lender, what structure? Because every hard money lender has different loan terms.
Right.
And there's a bazillion hard money lenders.
Right.
Some local, some national. Where do you start?
Yeah. So what I would look at it is, again, you're going back to your personal game plan and your personal current financial status. So the ways that you can fund a deal are, obviously, if you're fortunate, especially when you get going, you could be an all cash person to buy an initial piece of property. So you could do cash. You can do a business line of credit. So you can use different assets, whether it's something that's stock market based, whether it is a loan against another business that you might have, some other asset where you can get a line of credit and that credit can be used as cash to purchase properties and run your rehabs. That's kind of the second tier. The third tier or piece of the puzzle is a home equity line of credit. You know, we're obviously in Denver and values have skyrocketed. And if people have lower mortgage balances, they can get a nice home equity line of credit. I like that also as maybe funding your rehab component of it. That's a nice kind of, if people have anywhere from $100,000 to $200,000 in equity, get the HELOC. Don't draw on all of it, but have that capability so you can fund your rehab, let's say, with your HELOC. But then a large majority of first-time investors or newer investors are going to need to get hooked up with a hard money lender or potentially a private lender. And the difference between those two is typically the rates of what you're getting. But most people go hard money route. And it's making sure you've got a comfort level with that lender. You're right. There are some national lenders out there that are really good. We're lucky in Denver. There's some really great local hard money lenders and folks we have relationships with as well. And it's getting 100% pre-qualified based on their guidelines so that when you see a good opportunity, you can pull the trigger. And that is super, super important to have that predetermined and have that relationship dialed in, paperwork signed, credit pulled, documentation done. So that hard money lender says, great. And also knowing what their timeline is of how long they need to vet a deal and say, yes, you've requested these funds. This looks like a good deal. We're comfortable and you can close in the proper amount of time. So that's kind of your difference. And then you could do a business credit card as well. It's easiest typically of start with your primary card of who you've got your personal credit card through and say, I've just started a business and we're going to be using this to buy materials. Try to get a separate business credit card. Then again, you can use that to help fund rehab and material purchases. You can get points and hopefully go on vacation at the end of the year, but you kind of have a credit card as well. So you have, you know, five different areas of funding that you should hopefully have set up to be ready to do your first project or your 10th project.
That is really great information. And going to hard money lenders here, mm-hmm. I like how you talk about focusing on the comfort level with the hard money lenders right. And the personal relationship. So you sounds like you're putting a lot more weight onto the relationship aspect and not just who has the best term.
I would because for two reasons. One, the market has compressed a little bit, both nationwide and in Denver, that many of the terms are really, really close. So all things being equal, I would much rather go with the relationship to be my deciding factor. There are two different options to look at of which lender to go with if you're doing a quick project. So for example, there are some lenders out there that charge lower number of points up front, which is typically anywhere from 1% to 3% of the purchase price of the property. That's considered a point that you're paying on the front end. And then you have your monthly interest rate. And most lenders are anywhere from 10 to 15% on a monthly basis that you're paying interest-only payments on. But there's a couple lenders out there that charge either very little or no points or front-end costs. Their monthly interest is higher, but if you're running a quick project, it's actually a lot better to use a person like that versus if you're going to buy a bigger project, it's going to take you 6 months. Go with the lender that has lower points up front and then a more reasonable monthly interest rate.
I'm curious. So when you talk about these lenders that have, you know, zero or very low upfront points, what are their monthly interest rates like? Because I've not talked to hard money lenders with those terms, so this is news to me.
Yeah, so there is a lender out there that does a $795 essentially admin fee, and that's to get you set up, but essentially 0 points, and then they're charging 14% interest.
Okay.
So we ran the numbers on looking at doing a condo flip with a client, and it was far better because we were in and out of fixing up this condo in under 30 days and then selling it on the back, and it was at a lower price point too. It was much, much better than, let's call it, the traditional hard money terms are right around 2 points up front and 10 to 12% interest. Mm. So that number, especially on that type of property, was actually more advantageous.
And what are your thoughts on national hard money lenders versus local hard money lenders? Because for me as an agent, we always prefer working with a local lender. This is, you know, 30-year conventional stuff
right.
versus a national people because the local people just know the market and we get a lot more stuff done.
Yep.
Is it similar in the hard money world or how does that operate?
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think locally, it's better to work with somebody if you can locally when you're first starting. And primarily, you're honestly not going to get approved to work with a national. I shouldn't say not. Less likely to get approved with a national lender. The other thing is they are harder to work with when it comes to approving your loan and making sure you can move quickly on a good deal. So again, that goes back to the relationship side of things. I would much rather have a relationship with my lender when you send over the due diligence documents to your lender saying, this is the project we want to get into. They have a really good sense of the neighborhood. They know how fast things are moving. They've probably got loans out in those areas and they can move quicker. So I would definitely also recommend a local contact. We've talked to folks on a national basis now that we have a number of years of track record or for some of our clients and can get people pre-approved. And the good thing about that is once you can get approved, their rates are typically a little better because they are coming more from an institutional funding background. So you're getting your money from Wall Street essentially versus a private money lender here that might be personal funds or a group of investors. So yeah, we've come across folks that can be pretty competitive for people that have experience. But I really think it just goes back to everything gets really close on rates and terms. Go with who you have the best relationship with or feel the best about. Because if things go sideways, you need extensions, whatever might come up, I'd much rather do that than have to call a 1-800 number.
Great. So I'm going to quickly recap here. So make sure you get your personal financial house in order.
Yep.
With 1 to 3 to 6 months of building up a personal emergency fund. Mm-hmm. Get your significant other spouse on board. Pay off high interest rate, personal credit card debt and other things. Figure out, hey, where does it make sense to pay off the debt versus take the difference in the spread to go invest the money in.
Yep.
But get your house in order. The business side, probably get an LLC or some type of business entity set up. Now, we're not lawyers, so make sure you talk to a lawyer. We have to put that disclaimer in there. But then keep your business and personal separate. Keep ideally about 10% of the purchase price, which is going to be your down payment. About half your rehab costs, and then build up 1-3-6 months worth of your emergency fund to run your business and operate. Is that a good recap?
Yeah, yep, that's spot on.
Great, and then make sure you go out there and get your lending figured out, whether it's your cash or HELOC, hard money lender. This I can definitely know on because I deal with this all the time in helping people buy rental properties.
Right.
And if you don't have your lending figured out, we can't do anything.
Yeah.
Same thing in fix and flips. If you guys, great, you see a great deal, don't have your lending figured out, it'll probably be gone by the time you do. Like, great, you have a fun fire drill. Not a fun fire drill. You will have a fire drill of running around.
Yeah.
And you end up just kind of spinning your tires and wasting a lot of people's time.
Yep.
So make sure you get your ducks in a row for the lending side. Great. What other points do we want to talk about before we wrap up this episode, Derek? What other things do people need to know as you're getting into flipping properties?
Yeah, I would say, you know, a little bit about the realistic expectations. We've got that up on our screen. And we talked about setting up your proper criteria. And it's really deciding which properties that you should look at too. And I went back and kind of looked at our data from when we first started and talking to other colleagues who have done this as well. So I'd love to give your audience kind of a general sense, Denver market-wise, being realistic. You know, everybody talks about their home runs. Nobody talks about their dogs or their losses. So this is truly just kind of an average. But if you're looking at condos and townhomes, you're going to be looking at roughly a 4 to 6 week timeline to do those projects. And on average, you're going to be looking at about a $15,000 net profit. That takes into account probably having to do some sort of hard money lending, which cuts into your profitability a little bit, having the project run a little bit longer, troubles with contractors that inevitably come up. I think that's just kind of a nice base for some of your listening audience to look at. I feel like that number very quickly and easily grows to $25,000 to $30,000 for net profit in condos and townhomes when you've got some experience, when you've got systems in place and kind of where could you go a handful of years in the future. Those are the numbers that you can shoot towards. And then if you're looking at a smaller single family flip, or let's call it one side of a larger duplex or a townhome, but something that's in the 2,000 square foot area. House has 3 or 4 bedrooms, 2 or 3 bathrooms. Rehab budgets are typically in the $40,000 to $75,000 range, kind of your average flip, if you will. That property is normally going to take you 3 to 4 months to do that project. Your net profit is going to be $25,000 to $30,000. Again, when you're kind of getting going and ramping things up. And then let's fast forward a couple years in the future, you should be clearing $40,000 to $50,000 in net profit and definitely shrinking that timeline to 2 to 3 months would be a good average. So I think putting that information out there just based on our personal experience. Again, I'm sure people have way better deals, maybe not so good of deals. But thinking about that and framing it back to how do you want to live your lifestyle? What do you need this money for? What do you want your goals to be? And that can help you say, okay, knowing those ballpark chunks of potential earnings, the timeline, again, on a very general nature, how can that help fit your lifestyle and define your game plan and see, is this a business that you want to get involved in?
Now, talking about these condos and houses, mm-hmm. actually, I guess more on houses because, you know, there are different price points for newer investors.
Yes.
Is there a price band or price threshold you recommend people staying in? Do they go for the $1 million plus flip in Marsh right. Park? Do they go for right. a more $400,000 flip in the suburb? Like, what areas or price bands do you recommend?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's not only what I recommend, but I think it's typically what most people would qualify for to finance. And those are homes that sell under $500,000. I think there's people that are amazing at doing scrapes and doing custom builds and doing, the Wash Park seven-figure flips. Those can be very lucrative, but one misstep, especially when you're coming out of the gate, can, literally financially ruin you.
Yeah.
So my philosophy is I'm a sports guy, so let's use a baseball analogy. Let's hit a really good single. Let's not try to swing for the fences, and let's rinse and repeat and refine our system. So going under 500, our sweet spot is under $500,000. When we are looking at condos and townhomes, we're buying typically from $150,000 to $300,000, and then we're selling it on the back end for $250,000 to $400,000. That's kind of our sweet spot. If we're looking at single family homes, we're usually buying in the high $200,000 range to high $300,000 range, and then we're always selling under $500,000. This year I did 3 properties that sold over $550,000. And they were good deals, but they weren't as good a deals as some of our lesser expensive properties because we could turn them faster. I did one in Wash Park last year and a lot of extenuating circumstances, but that one took 14 months.
Ooh.
We sat in plan review with the city for 5 months. I finally had to, after many trips down there, went and met with the person who was allocated to our project. And he started asking me questions about a 2-car garage. I wasn't building a 2-car garage. He was looking at the wrong plans. I mean, there's crazy things that can happen. So again, I'd much rather have those bumps and bruises happen at a lower price point for many, many reasons. So I would steer folks that way to start. And then we're gravitating back. We've tried 7 or 8 projects that are higher end quote. I've never done a 7-figure one and I have no interest in personally doing it. And we quickly got back down to under $500,000.
And that's where you find it kind of be the sweet yep. spot, at least for you.
That's our sweet spot. And I think, especially with some of your strategies that I love as well, your other fallback is with a condo or a townhome or something, you can still cash flow a lot of those.
Mm-hmm.
So say we're wrong. We've got a property right now in Littleton that we just finished and put on the market. It's completely fixed up, super cool, 2-bed, 2-bath, 1,100 square foot property. And we just put on the market for $255,000. If I'm wrong and we have to sit for a handful of months, I can pull that off the market and I can rent that and I can actually cash flow. So you have that fallback versus if you're flipping in Corey Merrill or, Highlands or wherever else, the rental doesn't make sense because you've got so much money into it most times.
All right. Anything else? Because that was really good overview right there.
No, I'm super pumped. We've got these next 6 episodes, but I think it just goes back to being realistic, to setting up your personal team, your business team, and you have to think of this as a business. Even if you're going to just do one and try it, from a tax perspective, from a sanity perspective, think of running it as a business and how can you scale it over time or just make your life easier and run things more efficiently and have more personal time on your hands.
Great. All right. So this was the first episode in a 7-part series. If you guys have questions out there or comments, definitely make sure you reach out to me or probably actually reach out to Derek. Reach out to me. I'll probably email to Derek if it's specific to flipping stuff since he is the expert. And make sure you do check out the next episode, whether you catch it live or you catch the recording of it, because this is where it gets into the traditionally more fun stuff when right. it comes to flips, because all this overview entry-level stuff is not the fun stuff in my eyes,
yes.
but it's the necessary stuff we have to get done to line up our dominoes, getting a financial house in order, getting expectations, all that basic stuff. The next episode, we'll be talking about an overview of the Denver market and also getting into how to analyze deals. And Derek will be sharing his deal analyzer spreadsheet.
Yep.
And I think after the webinar is over, you'll actually be making it available for people to download, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Great. So if you guys want to get another spreadsheet, learn how Derek and his team analyzes properties, make sure you check that out and make sure you download the spreadsheet. All right, Derek, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Of course. All right, everyone. We'll see you on the next episode. So enjoy your day.